Yeah, we'll talk about work in progress, but I think an informal discussion is always good for that. I think my background is a bit different than some of other people here. We all have interest in cold atoms, but my background is more quantum optics and not atom optics or condensed matter. So what I will do in the talk is I will start with the very basic ideas and then become more and more concrete. And I hope you ask lots of questions, and especially when I use maybe a different language than you're used to. So I will talk about collective cooling. And I will start by giving you a motivation. And the motivation is quite, I don't need to do much convincing, but cooling is an interesting problem. What can be done already very, very well is the cooling of a single atom. So if you have a single atom or a single ion, then all one can do is one can apply a radially tuned laser field, and then the laser excites the atom, and then, because there's some energy missing in an unfavoring way, the energy is taken from the formon. And when the system decays, it doesn't put, if it gets de-excited via spontaneous emission, then it doesn't put this formon back into the formon basket, the formon is just lost. And then the laser excites again and so on, and then you have less and less formon, so the system gets cooler and cooler. So that works very well for a single atom. But the question is, of course, what happens if we have many atoms? And if you have many atoms, then what happens is you have a lot of recoil. If the atoms are close together, then the photon that is emitted by one atom might hit the other one and things like that. So then you get, the technique doesn't work very well anymore. So what people do, for example, to prepare a DEC is to throw most of the atoms away. So you remove all the hotter atoms from the trap and you have only a very small percentage of the initial particles left in the trap. And that's of course not very good because if you want to cool, for example, atoms in optical lattices, there would be another system that are interesting for cooling. Then there's crystals of polar molecules, iron crystals. Then what you want to do is not all the time remove most of the experiment in order to get it cool. Another thing is what people are recently very interested in is cooling of molecules also. And what happens is there is a very interesting experiment by Philip van Geer in 1997 that actually saw the cooling of a large cloud of atoms to very low temperatures. It's not explicitly published, it is kind of mentioned in an experiment that they did at that time in a very bad chemistry to by cooling, or they did a quantum non-demolition measurement experiment, and they saw that suddenly the for certain beginnings of the lasers, the atoms would go very cold, they would all accumulate in the maxima of the cavity, of the field in the cavity, and then emit lots of photons. So there are already experiments that they are kind of pointing out that maybe it's not necessary, and what we can get on a single atom, we can also get that with many particles. Yeah, so this is one of the motivations. There's also an experiment by Fleck et al. Fleck, where they have a large number of atoms falling through a cavity, and they also see that they get very cold. And there is no theory yet for explaining why that experiment works and where they get the cooling from. So there have been some attempts looking at this very bad cavity regime, but it hasn't worked.
So what's the basic difference between, you said at the top, that you know, this optical cooling when you have a large collector doesn't work because all the things that can go wrong. And now you're saying,
So let's say this is what theory says, and this is what has been already observed. So I'm kind of, I will talk more in detail why we think it might be possible. So there are still theoretical models missing for explaining what this guy actually guys actually saw.
But you're saying that the top is not based on the
fact. The single atom step works very well.
Yeah, yeah, that part. But the second line, where you said that it doesn't work with many, the same thing doesn't work with many.
Yeah, or it seems that in experiments I don't get to very low temperatures.
So that's an observation.
Yeah. So, okay, the difference here is that I use a cavity. Yeah.
And is the difference that it's a lossy cavity?
Yeah, so in both experiments they have a quite lossy cavity. There are a lot of theory on cavity cooling, but they mainly look at the strong coupling regime. So what we'll do here is we'll look also at the regime of a relatively lossy cavity. I will talk more about the basic ideas now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but not too. Yeah, so in order to do a. So with a single atom, you can do ground state cooling, for example. Yeah? But for creating a BEC, what you do is you have this cap and then you do this evaporative cooling where a very large percentage of the cloud is just removed. So there is some hope that you can overcome this with a cavity, but there's a bit of experimental evidence, but not very clear in the theories. But that makes it an interesting problem.
Okay, and one final thing. Have you moved on from molecules to atoms?
Okay. So this is really meant as motivation that this would be systems we would like to be able to cool this very.
But the experiment, the 97 experiment, that you found here, that atoms.
Yeah, that was both atoms. what I want to talk about is cavity cooling, and one of the motivations, for example, for looking into cavity cooling with respect to molecules is that one of the problems when you cool a molecule is with the laser is that that's very difficult to find close transitions. So you excite the molecule and then it decays, and there are so many states where it can decay to, so you kind of you lose the particles from the cooling process. But if you, for example, excite the particles with a laser, then you have you choose a certain transition on the way up. If you then de-excite with a cavity before it can spontaneously decay, then you create a closed transition. So that is one very strong motivation for looking again theoretically also into cavity cooling. The ion crystals I mentioned them because there is an experiment, for example, in built up at the moment in Aarhus in Michael Dritzen's group. And it also is interesting because then you have other parameter regimes available you can look at for this. So the basic idea is what we want to use is we want to use collective effects. I should say that this work is done together with Professor Vicenno. And we also got a lot of input with Philip, who I discussed with him a lot, and we tried to make the model we use as close as possible to the experiment that we did at that time. So let me talk a little bit about collective effects before we go into detail. So let's assume we have a laser Hamiltonian that excites the cloud of atoms. Then the Hamiltonian looks something like this in an interaction picture. So I have a 1/2 H for omega, and the state 0, 1 are excited and de-excited, and so on. That means if I start, for example, in a state where all the particles are in 0, and the state that I excite is actually one where I have 1, 0, 0, plus 0, 1, 0, and so on. That means the state that if I want to write this as one state, then I have to normalize it with square root of n. And that would be, for example, a symmetric state with one excitation. But in order to compensate for this field of n factor here, what I have to do is I have to write one half H4, or my cutting constant of the laser becomes squared of n times omega. And if I can write this Hamiltonian as something like 1 over 2 H4 omega times squared of n, and then for example A equals 0, capital A equals 1, so this would be the state with no particles excited. And then I have also a lot of other terms. So what I get is, just by applying a laser pulse, I get the square root of n enhancement. But this works only if most of the particles are in the ground state. If I have many of them excited, then I cannot take the advantage of this square root of n. In fact, then it vanishes, because it's not that far. Exciting one particle more, I can do the normalization. So we can only take advantage of it if most of the population stays in this, all atoms in zero state. But this doesn't matter, because we are anyway interested in decay processes. And that means if I, for example, I'm interested in a process where I excite the laser and then transport energy out of the system, it means when I get this square root of n factor enhancement, then I can put a very large decay rate here, yeah, without being in the completely overdamped region. And then you see that there's another advantage where the cavity comes in helpful. What we have done here is we have excited on average one atom, and the decay rate for this would be gamma. But what I can do is, I want to have a collective de-excitation process where the de-excitation also happens very fast. So what we do is we couple to a cavity and get a square root of n times d enhancement, and then we can make a cavity decay that is as large as a square root of nd, and like this, and then without being in the overdamped regime. So it means what I'm trying to say is that collective effects, they can give us a square root of n enhancement, but to really take advantage of it, we need to stay close to the ground state. But that's exactly what we will have a strong dissipation going on.
Sorry,
what's G? That will be the coupling to the cavity mode. The ground state of the atoms. So what we will do is, we can use a cavity to take really advantage of this enhancement. So our idea is to look at the setup like this. So we have a cavity, many particles, and we have a laser that is reti-tuned, and then we have this force is omega, and then we have a coupling to the cavity here with a G, and then a decay rate kappa. And the idea is more or less that we excite zero to this L equals zero state, go up, excite, go to the L equals one state, have a omega times square root of n. So now what we want to do, we make the laser reti-tuned so that we lose some phonons on the way. And then we have a limited parameter we need to take into account. And then the de-excitation happens with some kind of square root of n times the enhancement. And then we have, whenever we have a photon in the cavity, then we have, in that decay, with a rate kappa. That was the first case we looked at, was the kind of, so the idea is to excite collectively with the laser, with the phonon, and then have the energy transported out in also a collective way via the cavity.
But what works? Do all these all atoms in the same energy state?
It's not necessary. I can show that. I show it in more detail. I want to make one point before going into the concrete model. I want to point out that or the basic or what I'm doing is I'm going a bit ahead of how we went ahead for our initial ideas. But then I will point out that there are a lot of also subtle differences. No, no, it's not necessary. Yeah, even that is not necessary. I come to that question when I put down. I want to first point out some basic ideas before I write down lengthy Hamiltonians, and then we will see. The difference is not very big. You can what we do here is these states are called sticky states, and you can also define some generalized sticky states where you take into account how that you have different couplings on the different modes. The important thing is that you have on the outside many particles, and then you don't get any interference effects because we are you're always going from L equals zero. As long as if we manage to stay, that would be the easiest answer. If we stay all in particles in zero, and then I excite one of them, I will always have n terms in the state. So even if they are weighted slightly different, I get n states, and that means I have to renormalize my coupling with something that is of the order squared of n. So it doesn't matter if it's exactly the same or not. No, you can write it more general. It becomes more complicated, but the idea stays the same. It's like often in physics, in the ideal case, of course, you get some very nice mathematics when everything is exactly the same, but it's not completely, the effect doesn't vanish, it's completely when you go a bit away from it. It just looks all more complicated. There's one other thing. So the basic idea is we excite with the laser selectively, we lose a phonon, and then we kind of put, so everything happens fast. But there's one other thing I want to point out. So for this, for example, the Hamiltonian would look like, let's say, sum equal 1 to n, 1 half eta, eta omega, 1, 0, then we create a phonon here, for example. And then we have also a term where we have that is the coupling of the particle to the cavity. So we would have something H for D, 0, 1, and C bigger. And then we have other terms. So I go for the simple case, and we said that all the parameters are the same. So, but what when you look at the Hamiltonian, what I can do is I can do something where write I equals 1 to n, h4, and then I can write something like 1 half eta omega, the I delta, plus a d, and c delta, 0, 1, and you can conjugate. And that means what happens is that when I excite a particle, for example, what I get is the atoms effectively interact with something that I can, here I could introduce new particle. I could introduce an annihilation operator that something times B plus something else times C. Yeah? Because I have a superposition a phonon annihilation operator and photon annihilation operators or creation operators in that time. It means that the atoms interact with something that is neither a phonon nor a photon. And when you have something like that, so I have to normalize it completely, but then I can show that this new operator A also has all the right commutator relations. But that means but what the laser does, it excites something, some terms AI dagger AI, which have to do with BI dagger BI. Then I excite something that is something like BI dagger C plus DI, C dagger, and then also have a C dagger C. These are the fun ones. And these are the cavity tokens. The pull point of cooling is that these particles don't have a decay rate. These have a decay rate kappa. But now the thing is that this object here in the middle also has already a decay rate of 1/2 kappa. And that means that in principle, in order to do cooling, I don't need to transform all the phonons into photons. Yeah? So a lot of arguments in the beginning said that can't really be that they saw strong cooling was that when they are in the very overdamped regime, then you don't have any photons in the cavity. So if the system is strongly damped. If you don't have photons in the cavity, you could say there's no energy transfer really out of the system. But what we are saying is that we don't really need all of those. What we need if we transfer phonons into this coherence, then we have already a decay channel, how the energy can leak out of the system. And you could say that, for example, the number of phonons is of the order n, and let's say the cavity photons is of the order 1, but then this coherence can be of the order of square root of n, so it can be large. So even if you don't have photons in the cavity, you can have a large coherence, and then this can give you a decay channel. And that's a kind of decay channel that we pointed out that might be used by the system for cooling that other people hadn't looked at before. Yeah. So what makes this Hamiltonian is the laser. I will talk about it in more detail. The main message from this is that when we do our calculations, we are not allowed to do, in order to get this cooling effect, we're not allowed to do approximations that throw away this coherence. We cannot make a very semi-classical model because our cooling channel is something that comes from this phonon-photon interference. Yeah, I can show more details in a second. I just want to, so at the moment this is only the basic idea. I will put a concrete model with concrete things in the middle. What the message from this is really is we are looking for this decoherence channels. So we are looking from I'm not interested in the case where I build up phonons, photons in the cavity, because in a highly leaky cavity that won't happen. What I'm saying is that this will be built up, can build up something like that, and that's enough already to transport energy out. Okay. What I should do now is we had long discussions, and I gave a talk about this, for example, also in Innsbruck, and Peter Zoller had a lot of objections. So what we do now is we look at a more concrete model. Where we take a lot of these questions into account, but it's much easier to point out what the basic idea is with a simple model. So these ideas, they were published in the New Journal of Physics together with Giuseppe, and now in the meantime we have done more solid work maybe. So one of the criticisms we got, for example, from Peter Zoller and other people about the initial length work we did is that when you have some collective enhancement, then one of the problems we run into is that the phonon frequency mu is no longer a small frequency. So the phonon frequency can now be something, especially if the particles are weakly trapped, if they were in both of these experiments. So here they were even falling through the cavity. We can hardly talk about the phonon frequency. Then we are not allowed to do any rotating wave approximation with respect to this frequency. So, but in order to make it still possible to do calculation, and also because of that was the setup that they used in Philippe Janvier experiments, we now look at the following level. So we have something like this, so we have a cavity with a detuning delta, and then we have a laser that is rightly tuned with respect to the cavity, which is delta plus delta. Yeah? And then we have many of these atoms in the cavity. And the Hamiltonian we have then is something, so the laser Hamiltonian is E, and PE times E laser of epsilon T. And then what we do is the laser Hamiltonian is the usual one. Here's a T. And then we have a dipole moment also. And then what we do is we quantize the motion of the particles that we have here. So we say that KL times XI minus some equilibrium position is equivalent to eta I DI plus DI beta. And then what we also do is we assume the Lambdicke regime. So what we do is we take this term, or let's say e to the I KL XI minus RI, and write it as 1 plus I eta I DI plus DI beta. Okay, so, and that's the way how we get our Hamiltonian. And maybe I should just write down the total Hamiltonian. So the interaction Hamiltonian we get then is something like 1 over I on half h for omega I and sigma I minus. Then we get the term I equals 1 to n I over 2h for eta I, so this is this Lambdicke parameter, omega I di plus di beta, sigma I minus. And that is in an interaction picture, but now we do the rotating wave approximation only to the with respect to the laser frequency. And then we have a term plus sum over I equals 1 to n h bar di c beta sigma I minus plus the Hamiltonian conjugate. And then we get a lot of the tunings also. So for example, h bar mu I di beta di. And then we get h bar over delta plus delta, which is the detuning for the atoms. And then we also get a term in h bar delta delta c for the cavity.
No,
for the number of atoms. So we have n atoms in the cavity. And in order to not to have too many equations, what we do now is we assume that this detuning is really large. And then we can eliminate the upper level from the cavity. So what we... this is the Lambdicke parameter that comes from when I quantize the motion of the particle, so this KL RI minus the equilibrium position, I write it as eta I, DI plus DI beta. So that is something that kind of characterizes the steepness of the trap, or how well the laser, so to say, couples to the vibration mode. What people often in quantum optics is when they have an e to the I kr term in the Hamiltonian, we treat it as a number. But in principle, it is an operator that describes the motion of the particles. So this is the phonon annihilation and the phonon creation operator, and the constant in between depends on the concrete setup. Yeah. But for example, I talked with Philip Grandier, and he asked him what his parameters are, and he immediately told me that what he thinks what his parameters is 0.1. So it's so it's not something that so they are quite used to. Yeah, it's just a number. So what we do then is we eliminate the upper level, so I assume a large T-tuning delta, and what we get then is a Hamiltonian that looks a bit better, because what we do then is we get rid of the atoms in that way. But what I still have to take into account is the non-resonant driving by the laser, so it also excites the atom non-resonantly without destroying phonons. And the Hamiltonian we get is something like H bar QI C, then minus sum I equals 1 to n I h for eta I ui di plus di dagger times c plus the emission conjugated. And this di is given by minus omega I di over q delta. But this tuning what we get here is a bit of a funny one. It is something that is a delta plus a delta times n plus 1 plus sum over I mi mu I. So in principle, this tuning is an operator, but we treat it as a parameter in order to... So n is the number of photons in the cavity and mi is the mean number of phonons per particle. But we treat it as a parameter. I have some students working on this now, and they kind of try to do the calculations for a single atom and see how well this approximation, that this is not an operator, that we do some semi-classical approximation here, works out, and they seem to, that seems to be okay. So the important thing is that we keep the coherences that give us the cooling channel. So we get this term, and then we get also the tunings. So again, we get this term that describes the energy of the phonons, and then we also get something in H for D, D dagger C. And the tuning that we have now is a large one. It's something like delta minus sum over I equals 1 to N D I squared over delta tilde. So we get large detunings. So it's a bit simpler Hamiltonian than what we started with. We have terms in there now. So this is not, no, we are not doing the rotating wave approximation. So we have terms in there where we have Di and C. That means you excite the particles. When the particles get de-excited, you can, for example, place a photon in the cavity and a phonon, but you also can have a process. I should have written it the other way around. So if I have something like the IC dagger, then this gives cooling. Because whenever I have a photon in a cavity, it will fall out. So it's more likely to create photons than to annihilate them. But when I have processes like the IC dagger, C dagger, then that will describe heating. So I have cooling and heating in this Hamiltonian. But then we have also... C is the cavity for annihilation operator, for photon in the cavity. When we eliminate the upper level, then that means the particles are always in the ground state, which is exactly the case you're interested in. So we are, and then you lose that from the Hamiltonian, so then you get a direct coupling of, so the laser then establishes a direct coupling of the phonons to the cavity photons. So this is an approximation where we adiabatically eliminated the upper level. They're more like a catalyzer. It's a second order. It's in quantum optics, it's a bit of standard technique.
Right, sure.
You say that something evolves on a fast time scale. And whenever something evolves on a fast time scale, you set its time derivative equal to zero. Because what it means is it can reach a stationary state on the time scale where the real time evolution takes place, or the time evolution we're interested in. So there's always an epsilon of population in the upper level, but it kind of adapts to the rest of the parameters. That's
the
So C is a boson operator. So it annihilates a photon in a cavity, and that is definitely a boson. So we have really. What that means, it's really as a second order process. You excite with the laser, for example, you annihilate the photon and you immediately go down and place a photon in the cavity. So in that way, what the role of the laser is on the atom, so this kind of to establish a coupling between the phonons and the photons directly. And cooling means we want to translate phonons into other bosons that have a decay rate and can run off, and phonons cannot run off. So that is the coupling of the atoms. So more or less, so what we have is a Hamiltonian where I don't have much intuition anymore. I know that we have cooling processes, we have heating processes in there, and we have the tunings that are large. And in principle, we have six parameters. We have this eta, this here, then we have a cavity decay rate kappa, and the number of particles also plays a role. Then we have the phonon frequency, and then this large detuning d, and then... and then we also have this emission coordinator. So mainly we have lots of forms. Well, I won't solve it anyway. What we do is we use this Hamiltonian then to derive some cooling equations. So our system is still infinitely large, so I cannot do that. But what we can do is this. We can do this. We can say what I'm interested in is a quantity mi, which is the expectation values of bi dagger bi. Yeah. So in principle, I'm only interested how does the phonon number changes in time. And then I can take the master equations that then describe the system plus the decay, and derive an equation for that. And then what I get, for example, is something like mi dot equals eta I qi, and then I have some coherent z I 1 minus z I 3, and so on. And then I have to look for this coherence. Yeah. So this coherence would be defined here by the shift. For example, Zi 1 would be the expectation value of Bi C plus Bi dagger C dagger. So I get look at their derivative, and then I get more and more coherences. So we have all kinds of combinations. For example, Zi 2 would be a coherence that plays a role. it is something like an I, bi, c minus bi, dagger, c dagger, and then I get also a red I 3 and a red I 2. Maybe I write a z I, so this would be bi, c dagger, plus bi, dagger, c, this expectation value, and then I also would have a one that is a bi, c dagger, minus bi, dagger, c. So these are processes that describe conversion of phonons into photons in all kinds of variations. And in order to get a closed system of equations, I also need to look at how the phonon number in the cavity changes in time. And altogether I have to introduce something like 12 coherences. So what we get as is something like a set of cooling equations. And we have 14 of them. But it's still too much, but it's already better. And what I have to do is, with cooling equations, I don't get them exactly, because the more, if I look at these coherences and their time evolution, and I get new coherences and so on, so in principle, so I have to cut it somewhere. But from what I said in the beginning, what we are interested in is this phonon-photon coherences, because all of these coherences, they have a decay rate of 1/2 kappa, and I have to take them into account in order to get the effect that I'm interested in. I want to have them as a cooling channel, while I'm interested in the overdamped regime where we have no photons in the cavity. And well, we can cut them off somewhere, and what we can also do is we can in principle, when I cut them off, they are nonlinear. But what we can do is we can then linearize them. They become linear to a large n. So if I have quite a few phonons, which is not the case, what I'm really interested in, but when I have many phonons, then I can have a set of linear equations. And what we do then is we use Mathematica to calculate a stationary state. And then also we can calculate what cooling rates we get. And when these cooling rates are larger than zero, so we really have a cooling process, and this the stationary state MSF is small, then I know that I'm in a parameter regime where we might have cooling. That's the kind of the logic.
Large phonon.
But then when I calculate the stationary state for that case, and I get that the number of phonons is large, because these coherences, they describe processes where we have cooling as well as heating and everything. So I can exclude parameter regimes where we definitely won't get cooling. Yeah? So in our very naive first paper, we found cooling in every parameter regime because we did this rotating wave approximation. And we got all this to zero temperature, which was a bit too much. But it pointed out the basic ideas where we can get our cooling from. And now we do the more detailed work. So we calculate the stationary state, and then I minimize the phonon number. So by minimizing this number, at least I can find a parameter regime where I can then have a closer look at this nonlinear equation. So the stage we're at the moment is we did this. We calculated for the linear equations, we calculated what the stationary state is, and then minimized the phonon number per particle, and that gives us at least some of the parameters. We get B and Q and mu So we get some of the parameters and can put them, optimize them and say yeah, the Fanon number is small, so that there might be cooling in the sense that the non-linear equation play a role. And what we get is we find one parameter regime where we... So I'm happy to give talks about it because we don't have an intuition for it. The cooling equations, they have all these coherences in there to describe processes. And even if you have a much simpler system, it's difficult to get an intuition what the stationary state of the system will be, because somehow... it seems to have, it seems to be too complex to give a simple idea. That's why I put all the ideas while we're looking into it, and that also determines how I'm looking into it in the beginning. So what I'm interested in is that the laser establishes a lot of coherences, and some of these coherences, they might effectively result into cooling. So one of the tricks we did actually... I don't know, maybe it's possible, but I had no idea how to... Maybe we can have a look at it. The best idea I could come up with is saying, okay, I don't try to solve it. I look only at that quantity that I'm interested in, and I make this set of equations. Yeah, not for the case where we are interested in, not the final case, but yeah, for most of the regime. But I need to go to... Because at some point I have terms like where I have like products of these coherences, and then I, instead of introducing a new coherence that is even a larger operator, what I do is I write it as a product of two of them. But if you have... Maybe you can have a look at it. Maybe I don't have enough experience for it. My naive idea was to let's derive linear equations and see how far we get and look only at the quantities we're really interested in instead of solving everything. But there I get 14 equations that are quite complex. I'm not only interested in the time evolution of the Hamiltonian. What plays a crucial role in the cooling process is dissipation. We need to get the energy out of the system. We need to transfer the phonons into the coherences, and then they have a decay rate.
So that's
all there? No, not the part of the cavity decay. So what you do is you... Yeah, so we write... Yeah, maybe let's have a look at it later. The equation looks something like that. I mean, this mass equation, something like... kappa, C, rho, C delta, and this 8 point is something like the Hamiltonian that I had, minus I over 2 H bar kappa times C delta C. So that's the equation from where I then derive how this expectation values change in time. If there's a simple way around it, that would be nice, but I'm not so sure. It also depends all very, seems all to depend very, quite a lot on the parameters and things like that. So the system reaches a stationary state, as coherence is built up. Some of them are described cooling, some regimes we have heating. But what I want to do is I want to talk about maybe before coming to an end, about one step on how we can simplify it a bit. So what we do is we first analyze this part, and what I can also show is how we get cooling rates for this parameter regime. And what we do is we assume as a first step, we set kappa equals to zero, even if that is a very large parameter, and say that the system reaches something like a quasi-stationary system. So we set kappa equals zero and calculate the stationary state. And then most of the coherences that turn up in these cooling equations are equal to zero. But for example, that I assume that all particles see the same Z2 and Z4, for example, are not equal to zero. And of course, N dot and N dot are equal to zero, because then I have no dissipation, and the energy is not transported out of the system, so the phonon number and the photon number cannot change. Yeah? So we get this. But what is this? What we have is we have now values for the coherences. That means it might take a long time for the system to reach this quasi-stationary state. And once it reaches this quasi-stationary state, then kappa changes, for example, the photon number and the phonon number, and then the system kind of adapts its coherences again. Yeah? So you get a small change of this stationary state, but then it adapts immediately to the new phonon and photon number. So this is a function of N and N only. What we can then do is also we set kappa not equal to zero, and then we can look for conservation laws. We just look at the equation, and then we get some lengthy equations. What we can get is a conservation law for n dot and n dot, and we do that without any approximation. And what we then do as a third step is we substitute this quasi stationary state into this conservation law, saying that once the system is there, that's probably a good approximation. And what we get is something like relatively simple equations, theta, kappa, q over 2, and then I have something like z2 over mu plus d minus z4 over mu minus d. So what I get here is something that the formal number changes, of course, only when I have kappa, so the root term is proportional to the cavity decay rate. And then what plays a role is what I said in the beginning, the coherences between phonons and photons in the system. So only if these coherences have built up, then I have a direct channel for the phonons to vanish from the system. And then I also have a similar equation for N. And that is eta kappa q times n over 2, and there I would have, for example, z2 over mu minus d plus z4 over mu plus d. So this behaves very differently than this. So we might have cooling even if people know that this is a parameter regime where you can't have photons in the cavity. And then we put, what we did is we analyzed this regime already. So this is still for the case where our cooling equations are linear. But I can calculate and at least look for regimes where the overall effect would be a large cooling rate. And we found one regime but we still don't know what the final phonon number is in that case. And we get the whenever I say shortly what we would have, Q equals kappa to 8n, so this is not unrealistic, because if the number of particles is large, you can find a laser that drives that. And we would have a phonon frequency eta squared kappa over 16 squared of n to the third. So that is definitely very, very small. So that means the particles are weakly trapped. And that was also the case in the Grandier experiment. Then we have a detuning, which is a 1 plus epsilon kappa over 2 square root of n. And it seems that one has to choose the detuning very carefully in order to get into, or everything depends very very much on this detuning. So one of the problems with this is really that you have lots of equations and you're looking for a small effect. So the cooling rate we get in this case is eta over 4 kappa over 64, 1 minus 2 epsilon times n. So we get a cooling rate that can, for small epsilon in principle, be arbitrary large. But even if it gets a value of eta 4 kappa, then this is a very substantial cooling. Because when I have a highly leaky cavity like in Philip Monti's experiment, then kappa could be something like 10 to the minus 12 per second. And then multiplying it with 0.1 to the 4 still gives a very... If you have a cooling rate of 10 to the minus 7, that would be in the optical regime, and that would be quite significant. But we have not yet calculated the stationary state. I haven't evaluated yet the nonlinear equation. But maybe as a last remark, because I don't want to overdo it, what we have is we get some funny behavior out of the system. So for example, what might be the case is that one changes the detuning B and gets to the critical value where we have kappa over 2 squared of n. And then somehow at this value, if I make the cooling rate in this direction, getting closer to it, the cooling rate gets very higher and higher. Then it suddenly jumps and becomes negative and then goes this way. So that means then when someone changes the detuning slowly from here to here, so this is all cooling, and then suddenly the detuning goes over this value, then all the particles fall out of the trap because they're suddenly heated. So it's kind of a very small effect. But that's kind of... I mean, we haven't compared it yet with the concrete values that Philip had in his experiment, but what they saw that they looked at some intensity signal, and then they saw that the intensity increased, and then the signal would go away. Yeah? So it's kind of... So I hope we have a strong candidate to maybe confirm what he saw already in his experiment, but it's, in that sense it's still work in progress, where they want to make any final statements. And it's also the problem with these calculations is it all depends very... They're looking for small effects that are overall big. I mean, the cooling rate of eta to the 4 kappa is not nothing. It's huge in general, but it's small compared to the effects that are driving the time evolution of the system. So. But yeah, maybe I have some enlightening when they know how to solve it exactly. And, thanks for...
You said at the beginning of using relators to build coherence between photons and the phonons. But mm-hmm. it sounds analogous to dark state fluorescence in electromagnetic EEG conservancy, where there you use laser beams to build coherent between stimulating the photon state. And if I thought of it that way, I would wonder here whether you can do anything by switching, by adiabatically switching the laser off and then suddenly switching it on again, if you can move excitations from the phonon to the photon, then let those decay out of the cavity and then have some cooling cycle.
That would be really nice. In principle, one needs only one parameter regime to where it works, and everything is allowed that makes particles cold.
So the goal of this is just keeping constant laser fields.
Yeah, that's what we do at the moment because we don't really understand the process yet. But that would be nice if one could kind of use it in a more in a more controlled way. So here we are really looking at quasi-stationary states and things like that in order to...
Here you could solve numerically this with an adaptive algorithm, finding the best values of the parameter to give you the optimal cooling. The main point of having the back stack and having the limit is the fact that it keeps all the time close to the ground. So
The main point was that this is much easier to build a bad cavity, and also your cooling rate will always be a multiple of this cavity decay rate. So if you want to get really large cooling rates, you have to have a relatively bad cavity. But at the same time, you need the collective effects to efficiently get into a regime where you can take advantage of that big kappa.
And another possibility that one can have to I keep on here the fusion nature, one collective excitation from the ground state. Another possibility would be to use a blockage effect, for example. So I can imagine that you can have something like, for example, there is this experiment with the atom, for example. So you can have the ground state and you pack the crystal state. And you're going to pack two of them because otherwise the van der Waals the level of interaction will be strong. So you place the field and you have one atom in order to sample, which is excited for the field and you get the square root of n. Of course, you would like then to repump this atom into an excited state in the case. And you do this in this way, you would get also that new state. Because I use the collective effect. And I don't need a large I don't need a large competitive limit because I keep
You somehow you need I'm not sure I understand it completely, but somehow you need to get you start in the state zero, you go to one and what you're this L equal one state?
I will have the same ticket.
But this one, you said the L equals two state, that would be so far off shifted by some other.
I don't like it. It's a type of rotator, van der Waals rotation.
So what we have, what we would then have is we would just have oscillations between here and here.
And they include some sort of the fundamental condition because I quench now the editor state to some other state.
You almost need to have some decay that is also large in order to get the phonons that are... In principle, when we have a Hamiltonian, you have all this boson. When you have a B... I'm not sure I understand your question fully. When you have a B, then you have also Bi beta in the Hamiltonian conjugated terms.
So what we... What I mean is that it's not necessary to have a fast decay in order to have just one excitation, because you can block the further excitation.
That might actually be that plays a role in this kind of experiment. But for the moment what I...
I think this kind of experiment would play a role because the blockage effect is really easy.
How do you create that for free?
The blockage you create because if you start a little state, for example, then the arbiter state, the another arbiter state, will have a very strong
interaction
depending on the state that you are, or dipole level interaction.
Yeah.
So you can only type 2 of them. You can have a whole sample of thousands of atoms and you use type 1.
That's very interesting because what that does is it will take out the necessity to have a large decay here. And then you can make things faster.
I believe it's happened on the table that treatment has been quicker. You say that, seeing this collect is a sort of a time we can make this. But they see more because the sample is big and the looking traces is working up. But incredibly, if you have sample, you just have one. And then you can, as they say, quench, go to other one and then.
No, that's a really good idea. That would help a lot.
Yes. Can we go back to the
book? Yes, but I think this would be similar to here. You would have to go down on it.
Yes. So that was one of the criticisms of our first paper, this recoil. But what we're interested in here is we have the particles and then the photons come out here. So we have the particles interacting kind of coherently, putting their energy into the cavity, and then the cavity emits it. But if there's a recoil, I would expect that the recoil maybe pushes the mirrors a bit, but so I wouldn't worry about that.
It's very possible, and this is a technique that they call the subtle recoil. In principle, the photon can be reabsorbed by
The reason we don't.
I think this is the main point of laser cooling, that can be reabsorbed.
So the reason is that why we are interested in this regime where we have only one particle excited is that then the probability that this state decays in any direction goes with gamma. But the cavity decay is in a much faster process. The coupling for this kappa gamma is much smaller than anything like square root of n times d and kappa. Yeah? So even if we are in a relatively bad cavity, that is a process that we can neglect, hopefully. So that was one of the ideas. And that forces also the photons to come out via the cavity and not via the side. So that's why, I mean, some people think that it's not, that the recoil might kill the whole thing, but might not. it's a very classical way of looking at things. It might of course come out on the models, but we don't think so. The experiments they talk against that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they're called. Yeah, there are a lot of cooling papers. So what we assume here is that the particles are trapped. So we have a strong trap, an external trap. So there are a lot of cooling papers that look at the atom being trapped by the forces it sees when it moves in the standing field inside the cavity. So what we have is we have an external trapping potential. And that was also what they had actually in Philip's experiment. So they had a mod inside a leaky cavity. Then of course, what we're also interested in is, I went to the extreme case. In the first paper we wrote, we looked at cooling of a collective mode and cooling of individual modes. And we found that the cooling of the collective mode is easy, that happens more or less immediately. For cooling of the individual motions, we first need to build up the coherences that then initiate the cooling. So what we did now is we looked at the more extreme case where we say that the particles where you have a gas in here, that each of them more or less sees its own trapping. So we neglect the interactions between them and we go to the extreme case that each of it has its own motion. And then we contest the motion of each individual particle. Because that is the more difficult case, we look only at that one. So we look at the extreme case. So if you can cool the individual motion, then cooling collective motions, I think, is more. Nobody doubts. So.
There are many modes of action dependence. Some dependence of the couple to one collective mode.
But for example, if you look.
I would expect that it's only for the collective mode and all the other modes.
So we look only at all the other modes. But for example, when you look at optical lattices or an ion crystal, then you have a situation where the ions are, and there are hundreds of them, I've seen it in interaction lab. So let's say you have a 3D crystal like that in a cavity, then each of them has its own trapping potential. Of course you could say in an ion trap you have a lot of collective motion, but if you have really many particles, and if this ion starts shaking a little bit, or the continuous motion gets such a broad spectrum because you have so many modes of how they can move collectively, that to a very good approximation you can say each of them moves independent in the potential created by all the other ions. Yeah? That would be, for example, a situation that is very much closer to our model. Or when you have the polar molecules or an optical lattice, then you are very close to the situation that each of them moves individually, so that there are no strong interactions. Or there are so many interactions that you can see the particles again as individuals. But I'm trying to find a balance between what's realistic and what can still be calculated, and I'm really too much on the border of what can still be calculated. So maybe once we get a better understanding, we can move to more complex systems.
Mm-hmm.